sound. Logic podcast. Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing Rolling Stone 500. Greatest album.
Another sort of random little nuance that probably we are the only ones who care about. I think this is one of the very, very few bands on this list that we have seen live together.
Oh, right. Yeah. And I was going to say something about that.
Same time as we saw the Rolling Stones, the Stones, one or the other.
I was trying to think. It's the second band on this list that we've seen together from that concert, from the SARS talk, because we will eventually talk about Rush because they're now on the list. And I don't think the Guess Who is on this list. And I don't think the Isley Brothers are on this list, but they were all there. Is Justin Timberlake on this list?
He's got to be on this list.
Yeah, he might be. There might be at the end of it, like several bands that were all at that concert that day. I think everyone else was mostly Canadian bands that aren't on this list, except for maybe the Flaming Lips are not Canadian. They might be on the list, but I don't think so.
It was a while ago, I think, as part of going through the 2012 list that we talked about going to SARS-Stock.
Yeah, that would have been from maybe the first time we talked about the Stones way back.
Yeah, when. I think that's right.
It was pretty high up Exile Main Street on the 2012 list.
Yeah.
But yeah, not too many bands on this list that we've seen together. I think the only other one might be Coldplay. Because I do believe they have an album. Anyways, we digress as normal. That's fine.
Why don't we play a little bit of that now?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Ben, and you're listening to the Sound Logic Podcast.
This is Mike. Each episode, we discuss one of music's greatest albums from Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 list.
Brought to you by two guys with no credentials.
So we're going to talk about the Stones this week, talk about Exile Street, and this is the first album, or the first artist, rather, where you and I have both seen them together in concert.
Oh, yeah, sure enough.
So we saw them at Molson Canadian Rocks for Toronto in 2003, also known as SARS-Stock. This was a benefit concert that the Stones, I think they even suggested it.
Yeah.
The Stones suggested it, and then they worked and created this massive benefit, and it was supposed to just bring a lot of people in and revenue in to help Toronto, who had their tourism and economy had really suffered earlier that year after a breakout of SARS, which is a respiratory sickness, illness.
It wasn't, you know, a widespread epidemic. It was a global problem, but, you know, there were like a very small handful of cases in Toronto, but just that little amount really crippled the tourism industry with a lot of fear around that. Wikipedia lists several alternative titles, some of which I have no memory of. So the official name was Molson Canadian Rocks for Toronto.
Right.
Had to get that corporate sponsor in there.
Yes.
But it was also referred to as Toronto Rocks, Stars for SARS, SARS-Stock. That's the one that I think
I remember
using most frequently. SARS Fest, SARS-a-palooza, the SARS concert, or more descriptively, the Rolling Stones SARS benefit concert.
The ones that I remember are SARS-Stock, Toronto Rocks, and also I heard the Stones Rock Toronto.
Okay.
And that one's not listed here, but they're the Stones Rock for Toronto. I heard that one too. And I think that as the radio stations locally were pumping it up, they were, I think, using just some different names that maybe weren't official, because it didn't have an official name for a while.
Yeah.
So, like, I think people were just making up. I think SARS-Stock was the one that
that fit the most, you know, mm-hmm. blending the Woodstock and the SARS thing. But yeah, this was a huge event.
Yeah.
About 500,000 people showed yep. up, and it was in at the Danforth Park, and part of that is a abandoned or not commonly used airport, like a, I don't know if it was at one point a commercial or military airport. So a lot of the vendors,
an old military base.
That's right. A lot of the vendors were set up along the old runway, the tarmac.
That's right.
And one of my big memories is jumping ahead a bit. At the end of the concert, the Stones were done, and we were leaving. Perspective: this was July 30th. It was hot. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. And they were giving out bottles of water because, I mean, obviously they wanted to avoid any lawsuit from people passing out because mm-hmm. it was smoking hot. We were pumping back the water. And when we left on the tarmac, it was probably about two bottles thick everywhere. And all you could hear was this deafening sound of water bottles crunching as we walked out. I don't know if you remember that.
That's a great memory. It left my mind.
I distinctly remember leaving, you know, with thousands of people across mm-hmm. the asphalt, and mm-hmm. the sound was deafening. They actually put a call out on the radio that day and for the next few days for volunteers to come and help clean up because it was just a mess. They had, you know, garbage cans, but they couldn't even come close.
Full.
Oh, yeah. They were full. So that's kind of a funny memory when I think about just kind of where we were. And on that tarmac, it just made the sound even louder. But
I want to.
This was a pretty significant event, and I still bump mm-hmm. in. I bumped into somebody on Saturday who said, "Oh, I just got Stones tickets to see them. You know, I want to see them. It's worth it. I've never." I said, "Have you seen them before?" She said, "No, I was supposed to go to SARSTOCK." I said, "Oh, I was there. That was just like 2 days ago that happened." So
yeah,
people are still talking about this event. Uh-huh. Do you want to break down some of the artists that were on here?
Yeah, before we get to that, I remember the feeling of being a part of something historically significant and having a lot of pride in that. I bought a t-shirt, a festival shirt, and I remember feeling a little annoyed that the Molson logo was so prominently displayed on the front.
Right.
But I wore that t-shirt really hard. I left for college that fall, and that semester I did a semester abroad in South Africa, and it was one of like four t-shirts that I brought with me. So it got worn and worn and worn and worn, and like got washed in, you know, on the banks of a river when we had a rural stay with a host family without running water, and you know, washed in about a billion you know, laundromats across the country as we traveled. And it became sort of a token of something significant that I had done. And it was fun to have my American friends, I was the only Canadian on that trip, you know, scan my back to see which artists had been part of it and ask me about the Canadian artists they'd never heard of. And
right,
it really was cool. I also purchased the DVD after it came out and still have it. I was thinking, I really should go back and watch that. It's been several years since I've put it in. The other memory before we get to the artists about the heat is that I feel like halfway through the afternoon, I just felt such a intense heat fatigue. And this was significant because we spent our summers standing outside, walking through the fields out in the hot weather. Mm-hmm. And yet, I was beat, and it didn't seem like there was enough free bottled water to like keep me feeling hydrated. I think by the time the Stones came on, who were the last to go on in the headliners, it was already dark. And I remember standing for the first couple of songs and then just sitting down and then eventually lying down and just being so fatigued that I was just like, I'm going to just not even watch what's going on, but just listen. And I'm pretty sure that had to do with the intensity of the heat that day.
Well, when we were out there, we got there just after noon.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it started. And the Stones didn't come on till the sun was already set, because the sun set while AC/DC was performing.
Yep.
And then the Stones came on maybe like after 9. And the thing ended, you know, I want to say around 11. That's like, That's 11 hours. You know, it was 9 hours out in the hot sun, and it was a hot day. So, yeah, absolutely. It was a long one.
I also remember, I don't know if this stands out in your mind, but someone sitting like a picnic blanket or two away from us had a false bottom in his cooler of food where he had stacked a couple of six packs of beer.
No way.
He was selling them for like 10 bucks each to the
I don't remember that.
Super thirsty people around us. And I remember just thinking, that guy's a genius. How did he do that? I remember security also for a ticketed event was really lax. I don't even remember if we had to show our tickets at some point. It almost just seemed like we parked and started walking. At some point, maybe we passed through some sort of a...
Yes, there was a like really, really early, because it's a huge, basically an open field, right? It's not really a park. And they did have some fencing set up at one end of it. And I don't know if it went around. It must have gone around the whole thing, but there was a little turnstile there. But I just remember having to walk so far from that gate to get... And we had never been there. And it wasn't like an official or common festival ground or concert ground.
We just kept the Pope once before, I think, for a massive like.
Yeah, it might have been World Youth Day, which was maybe, I think, a few years before that. It would have been JP2, I think, coming for that. But we just walked and walked and walked, and then all of a sudden there's this massive stage kind of at the one end. Oh, and the other thing, I have a couple other memories. The other thing, and I have a few conspiracy theories, which I won't share about this one, but there was Mad Cow and there was a big scare and the Canadian beef sales were down. Okay. Right. So I remember very vividly Dan Aykroyd standing on the stage eating meat and saying, "This is Canadian beef and it's delicious." And encouraging and they had like places selling, you know, sandwiches Alberta or beef. Ribs or whatever.
Yeah.
And it all saying, you know, Canadian beef, all Canadian beef or Alberta beef, and really, really an added marketing thing that they were using, whoever was involved with it, whether it was the government or whatever, was using this as a tool to push Canadian beef, saying it's safe, there's nothing wrong with it, it's good. Well, Dan Aykroyd says it's delicious, so it must be good then. I remember that, and my tie into the blackout is that I felt that the explanations were the blackout. I never really bought them. And when the blackout happened, the power was out for several days. Every house, every restaurant, every grocery store threw out all their meat.
Oh.
Because they couldn't keep them frozen. So everything thawed and it all went in the garbage. And if you're a restaurant or a grocery store, everybody had to restock. And it massively, and I think very under-publicized, put like this adrenaline injection into the beef industry, because everybody had to go out and buy massive quantities because anything they had stocked up was gone. You don't have to put a whole lot of stock into that, but I always felt that the explanation for a coastal-wide blackout just did not add up to me. With so many different power stations across the Eastern Seaboard that they would all go out at the same time. Just, I don't know, it just seemed funny. And then you get this injection of beef sales because of it after a industry that was suffering just previously that year. So anyways, do with that what you will.
I don't think it was coast to coast. I'm going to call you on that.
No, it was coastal. It went down the Eastern Seaboard, like down into...
Oh, into the United States.
Into like...
Yeah, it was kind of Great Lakes area, wasn't it?
Well, no, it went down into... Well, yeah, into Pennsylvania and New York, all through Ontario. It was huge. It was massive.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many, even in Ontario, there's so many different power stations, and I think many that aren't even connected in terms of where they service, and everything went out. And I don't get it. There's so much, there's a lot of, I'm not a specialist in the area, but there's a lot of isolation in terms of power sources. How do they all go out at the same time if they're not connected? Seems fishy, Ben.
We're about to start something here on the internet that I'm not sure I'm comfortable being a part of.
Oh, that's fine. You don't have to. Ben Wyman does not endorse this message. You heard it from me. Well, so, anyways, funny. Okay, so that's a bunny trail. Back to Sarstock. Like, I've grown to love a lot of these artists who were there. Do you want me to list them out?
Sure.
Okay, so this was like... Remember, the first bunch of acts only played for like 20 minutes until we get to the last like five acts, and they play a little longer. So it opened with Have Love Will Travel, which was kind of like a Blues Brothers thing with Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi. And then we've got Sam Roberts, Kathleen Edwards, La Chicane, which is a French-Canadian band, The Tea Party, The Flaming Lips, Sass Jordan, who played with the late Jeff Healey.
Oh, I forgot that.
Jeff Healey played he's passed now, but he was a blind guitarist, really, really, really awesome. The Isley Brothers, Blue Rodeo, then Justin Timberlake, and then we get into like the four big acts. You got the Guess Who, Rush, AC/DC, and the Stones. Mm-hmm. So this is a pretty stacked afternoon.
Especially for Canadians, I think. Yes. Aside from the Flaming Lips, most Americans wouldn't know anyone from that first half.
Right. Yeah.
And somewhat interestingly, Justin Timberlake may have been the biggest artist at that time. But because of the heavy sort of classic rock emphasis of that second half, he was basically booed off the stage. People were chucking those free water bottles at him. I remember him kind of like weaving through the water bottles as they were coming flying at him. And I, maybe it was because we were so far back from the stage, but it almost seemed like we were watching something comical. It didn't feel like we were even at the same venue where this was going on, but
no.
All these classic rockers just so bitter that Justin Timberlake is up there dancing around. And he actually came back out with the Stones, right?
He did. He came out for Miss You, and they even blended Cry Me a River into that.
And I feel like they stopped playing for a minute and like told the audience to stop booing.
Yeah. Keith Richards was ticked.
That's really funny to think about now, but the Stones having to like calm the crowd and be like, just let this young guy be with us.
I have so many memories about this. I remember when they announced Justin, I was right on board with all the naysayers. Like, he has no place here.
Yeah.
He had released his first solo album, so he was coming out of being in NSYNC and then doing a solo very pop album. And when he got on stage, I was probably booing as well. And I want to say this very sincerely. When he started playing... And he opened with Senorita, and he had a full jazz funk band with him, and he was playing keys. Within the first couple minutes, I went, oh, this is actually really good. And I remember looking at our buddy Aaron, and we both looked at each other, and he was more into like hip hop and other stuff. And we both looked at each other and went, okay, I'm really enjoying this. Kind of like very conflicted. And I want to say, even though he was booed, and I probably was booing him when he came out, his set of four songs was really, really good. Very musical, a lot of fun. And, you know, I don't want to say I was converted at that moment, but I know that between my wife and I, we own that first album, and I really like it. And he's become, you know, very big since then. The other memory I have is many, many years later, we know that Justin Timberlake appears a lot with Jimmy Fallon on Jimmy Fallon's different late night shows he's had. Now he's doing the Tonight Show. And Jimmy Fallon does a segment where he asks artists and mostly comedians, he says, what's the biggest you ever bombed?
Mm.
And I don't know if you've seen this, Justin Timberlake does it, and this is the
the
event that he referenced as the biggest I ever bombed. He said, I was asked to do this with all these classic rock artists and Justin Timberlake. And they were throwing water bottles at me. I was like dodging water bottles and went off. And I don't think he was like angry about it, but kind of like he knew how much anger and disdain there was for him there, and like couldn't believe it. And he seemed to kind of laugh about it, but that was what he chose. And I was like watching that, like I was there and I was doing that. I kind of felt bad.
Wow.
but no, like if there's definitely a point where I started to like JT as an artist, that was it.
Yeah, and it would be interesting. He was still essentially the guy who broke away from NSYNC in this moment. It'd be really fascinating to have the same set list of people re-perform now. It almost feels like he'd get bumped to the headliner just because of his current relevance and lasting power. It'd be interesting to see if that predominantly classic rock audience would respond in the same way, given his history. Who knows? It's hard to say. I got a different kind of appreciation. I also felt like, you know, the organizers just weren't thinking this through. This is not kind.
Yeah.
It's not kind to him. I remember thinking, wow, this is good, and also it doesn't belong with the rest of what's going on here.
I thought, why wouldn't they have had him earlier in the day when there's not as many people there yet? You know, but I guess maybe they felt it would be a draw. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was very good, but it was just weird to put him just before the four kind of headlining bands.
Right.
Yeah, just to touch very briefly. So Sam Roberts was one of the first bands, and he was just coming off his first album. He's now released about six, and he's one of my favorite artists. But I didn't really know him at the time that well. And then the Guess Who, I thought, played one of the best sets of the day. They came after Timberlake. And then Rush played, and they only played four tracks, which is like disappointing as a Rush fan, as I am, but maybe there weren't a ton of us there. and then AC/DC, I don't know about you, but I thought they stole the show. AC/DC played, it was the sun was about to set, and then it was setting during the middle of their set, and then it kind of was down by the time they were done. And it was like really a cool kind of ambiance. You got to see them in a lot of different lights, like literally, so that was cool.
I was trying to find a set list, and setlist.fm, I guess, is a site where people upload set lists. You can click on the different artists that day, and they have eight tracks for Rush, which feels longer than I remember them being up there. I also thought they
don't remember
very, very short period of time.
I don't remember eight tracks. I remember four for the Guess Who. It was like two or three for most of them. And Justin Timberlake, the Guess Who, Rush, all had four. AC/DC played a much longer set. It was more like an hour. And the Stones played for like an hour and a half. But AC/DC was like awesome. And then the Stones were good. If someone had said to me, "You want to go like partway through?" I probably would have said yes.
Yeah.
Because number one, we were tired. It was not like amazing. AC/DC just had this energy to them, and it was a blast. And the one really funny thing, we talked about the SARS, that it wasn't a worldwide epidemic, but in Toronto, I know there were a few fatalities. I want to say respectfully, because I don't remember. I think there were about three people who did pass, unfortunately. And Keith Richards, bless his heart, got up to do a solo performance of Ruby Tuesday, and before the song says, "Just want to dedicate this song to the ones who took the hit, because you know they're gone." And then we were like, "Oh man, that is your tribute to the people who passed away." It was like, "Okay, I guess it's the thought that counts." But good grief, you know, it was like that. He sang and played Ruby Tuesday on his own, which was interesting to say the least. But I'll never forget him, like, you know, this is like, are the families at home going, you know, so happy, or like,
yeah.
I don't know, I don't want to say too much to be disrespectful, but
oh my.
Yeah, it was I don't know if that part's on your DVD there, but
I don't think everything made the cut on the DVD.
You're
right. And because I'm wondering if Wikipedia is drawing the set list from the DVD. That might be possible. Because I do have some memories of stuff that they list here. For some of them, I think you're spot on. They actually have five tracks listed for the Guess Who.
Yeah, that might be right.
Let's see, what were the other ones? Justin Timberlake only has two, which I think is correct. And Rush.
He only did. I thought he did more than two. He did. He did Senorita.
Cry Me a River. And he came back out with the Stones.
Yeah, but I thought he did more.
For Rush, they have eight tracks. Tom Sawyer, Limelight, Dreamline, YYZ, Free Will, Closer to the Heart. They apparently did Paint It Black, a Rolling Stones cover, and then finished with the Spirit of Radio. I don't remember
eight. Well enough.
Sam Roberts just had three. That seems about right in my memory.
Yeah, he was first.
And Blue Rodeo.
Like the
just
Isley
had
Brothers
three.
Did like, yeah, I think they all did like three.
The Isley Brothers, they have seven, which seems
that's
long
right.
for me.
Well, they might have done some mashups or like medleys.
Yeah.
They might have mixed a few all together because they had already been around for like 40 yeah. years.
The Tea Party only had three.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones apparently played 16 songs, including an encore. And actually, they list an encore for AC/DC yeah. too, so they must have... I yep. do remember just loving that set and
oh,
people
yeah.
wanted more, so they came out one last time. Interesting. Anyway.
So I'm sure we could go on and on about all the bands, but you and I were part of history.
Yeah. I was thinking this morning this might be the biggest concert I've ever been to, and then it dawned on me that I also went to the Philadelphia location of the Live Aid concert, which was the 20th anniversary of Live Aid.
Okay.
And the estimates there are a little bit, they're a pretty wide range because it wasn't a ticketed event. You just walked
right.
up. And I have very few memories of that concert except for Will Smith singing the Fresh Prince theme song.
Nice.
But the estimates get as high as 1.5 million people for that one location.
Oh, wow.
And of course, it was a global concert, so depending on who you talk to, they might include, you know, the other different sites. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, they would stream in footage from the other global locations to the
right.
different sites, and we'd watch them sort of between sets.
They did like a band of scientists that were in Antarctica or something.
Oh, I don't remember that. That's funny.
They did one from every continent, including Antarctica, and then there was two in... Oh, hold on. One from every continent... I know there were two in North America because there was one near Toronto in Barrie.
Yeah.
And did they do another one in the U.S.?
No.
No, it was just Philadelphia. So there was two in North America and one in every other continent, including Antarctica. Was U2 at that one?
They weren't in Philadelphia, but they... Oh, yeah, they were in the U.K.,
okay. Oh, right. That makes sense. And I think Beyonce was in Philadelphia, right?
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I think definitely my biggest concert.
Yeah.
In terms of crowd. Yeah, 500,000. Like, that's, I don't think I've been to anything even close to that.
And unlike the Philadelphia stuff, this felt more significant for some reason. I think I sat and enjoyed the concert more than in Philadelphia, where everything
yeah.
just seemed packed. We spent most of the day walking or looking at a screen, not even being able to see the stage. And so, I don't know, it felt, because we were in this giant field in Toronto, it felt like we were a part of something that was really that big. Whereas, you know, in Philadelphia,
yeah.
it almost felt like little neighborhoods were enjoying the concert in different locations. Mm. So,
yeah,
the Rolling Stones. So which of the other artists that Molson rocks for Toronto would be on this Rolling Stone top 500 list?
AC/DC
yep.
is. I think that's it. Rush is not. The Guess Who is not. I don't think JT or NSYNC are. you know, all the none of the Canadian artists, so, you know, Sam Roberts, Tea Party, Blue Rodeo, Sash Jordan, they're not on. I don't think the Flaming Lips are on. The Isley Brothers, I don't think, are. So it's just AC/DC.
Hmm.
So yeah, for such a monumentous event, it's really just the two headliners that are kind of captured in this sort of historic thing. I would say, you know, certainly the guests who are well-known, Rush, we've already talked, that they should be on this list mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah.
Certainly for moving pictures. Justin Timberlake, I think if you did this list in another 10 years, he'd probably put one of his albums on.
I think so.
2020 Experience, or maybe Future Love Sex Sounds.
I mean, even his debut album, I think, was far,
it was good.
Far more monumental than people realize.
It was good, and I think certainly launched him into the spotlight. And he's done, like, he did that stuff with Chris Stapleton, which kind of crossed over into the country. He did a couple tunes with him,
mm-hmm.
singles, kind of country crossover. And his touring band for 2020 was the Tennessee Kids. So it was a band out of Nashville.
Hmm.
If you get a chance, watch that. Netflix has a live concert film of that, and it's really, really good. Yeah, so I think that's it.
Stay tuned for our review coming up this Saturday morning of the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. Should be a good one.
Yeah, double album.
A double album.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that classic episode of ours. Tune in next time for the next album on the new 2020 Rolling Stone list.